Hi, I'm Amy Halloran, here with another food diary focusing on women in grains. Today we have with us Sarah Black, a baker I really admire. Sarah, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's so much fun always to talk to you, Amy.
Yes, you too. So can you frame your life in baking for our listeners who might not be familiar with you or your work?
Sure. I always like to say that I came to bread making from failure in cooking and in pastry, but happily found a companion with bread. It just kind of melded very easily into my life, and I was hired to be one of the first bakers at Tomcat Bakery in New York, and the owner, Noel Comis, had previously been a chef in the city, opened Tomcat in the mid-1980s, and we learned by doing. I went on from there to help open another bakery in New York called Ecce Panis, then came back to Tomcat and opened my own business called Campanio for 10 years.
And tell us about the breads you were making, because it was a new day for bread back then.
It was a new day. It was an exciting day. It was around the time when Eli Zabar and his bakery were puttering along, and the same with Bread Alone in Woodstock, New York, and La Brea Bakery in Los Angeles. So there weren't many of us, and we kind of banded together early and shared our experiences, but we were working primarily on baguettes and rolls and sourdough.
And you were taking your inspiration from European traditions?
Noel did. I was taking my inspiration from him because I didn't know that much about bread, although I had studied Carol Field's book, The Italian Baker. And previous to starting the bakery, I had had my hand in papermaking. It's a very wet craft. I think you and I may have talked about this previously, but that led me to become more involved with very wet doughs like ciabatta and like focaccia. And Carol Fields really kind of helped me manage that transition.
And can you describe Carol Fields? I'm not familiar with her.
She's a baker. She was a baker from San Francisco. She passed away not too long ago, which is a very sad thing. But her book, The Italian Baker, has all sorts of very charismatic, rustic Italian recipes, and she influenced so many of us, but especially me, in terms of these wet doughs that I talked about, focaccia and ciabatta.
And I love that you also had a little bit of an art life, right? I mean, that's how you got into the paper making.
Exactly. I moved to New York to be an artist, but I think on the very first day I realized I just didn't have it. I didn't have the confidence to be the kind of success that I could immediately see, and thought about how I could translate that experience. So I did try my hand at cooking at Jam's restaurant with Jonathan Waxman, and I tried my hand at pastry. I was the first pastry chef at Union Square Cafe. Didn't do very well with that, but when Noel opened his bakery, I thought, this sounds like something could be promising for my future, and it turned out to be just that.
Yes, it really did unfold. Can you describe the ciabattas? And I want to hear some stories about that.
The ciabatta I started making while I was at Tomcat because I so loved the experience I had in paper making. And I think that because it's such a challenging dough, that I was lucky in kind of being designated the person who introduced ciabatta to New York because no one else wanted to take it on.
Uh-huh.
And when I began my business under the wing of Tomcat, I only made two doughs. They were focaccia and ciabatta, and we would make hand-cut ciabatta rolls. The story that you're probably referencing is the fact that I had maybe 12 employees, and we would gather around two long wooden tables and literally pour out the ciabatta dough onto the tables, and then we would all hand pull it until it was about an inch high, very lovingly patting it down all of the way, and then we would hand cut these rolls. So you can imagine there was no gluten manipulation. And by the time the rolls were finished baking, the holes were so beautifully large that they literally almost floated up off the table, and everyone wanted them. I had all of the best restaurants in the city for that reason, but of course then my labor costs grew very high because of the intensity of the actual work.
So describe for people who might not be familiar with bread, no gluten manipulation. So,
well, when you knead your dough, which is a traditional way of making dough, you really toughen the gluten, which is the matrix that happens when you add water to flour. Flour has protein in it. That protein becomes the foundation for the gluten. And by moving or pushing or pulling your dough, you start strengthening that gluten. Probably, 15 years ago, a whole new movement began within our industry where we kind of stopped doing so much kneading and started doing more folding and being much more gentle with our doughs so to protect the interior crumb. By doing so, you get a crumb, which is the interior of the bread, that's so web-like and ethereal. It's much nicer to eat, in my estimation, and it's beautiful to look at.
And thinking about, so 12 people at a long table, pulling out a wet dough to an inch thick, and then cutting it with bench knives or...
No, we had little round metal cutters, which we would cut, and then we would pull our rolls into an oval shape.
Oh, wow. That must have taken a lot of cooperation.
You know, though, amazingly, we all so enjoyed it. It was a very kind of zen time where we were literally concentrating on this process. It was very enjoyable.
I would have loved to have been in the room. I really think there's something to people all working together on the same task. And
well, Amy, you and I are going to have that chance soon.
We are. We are going to be teaching a class at the Asheville Bread Festival. All breadheads should come to Asheville on April 13th because it's just a really fun day of very affordable classes. And Sarah and I are going to teach a class about sourdough, not your traditional breads of sourdough, but my traditional bread. Sarah's going to lead the bit about making a sourdough and understanding a sourdough, and I'm going to make English muffins and also tortillas because
which is brilliant, you know, because that just makes it so inviting and so accessible.
Well, I still have a big fear of shaping bread. It's my biggest mountain to climb, and I feel like I'm going to get altitude sickness even trying to do it. This morning I was thinking, well, what about the drop loaf, like the drop biscuit? I'm going to see if I can perfect the drop loaf.
Well, I like that idea. Right? That's a whole new direction, Amy. You could be in charge of that.
I think I am.
Your legacy.
Yeah, we have a loaf in the fridge today that really looks like it was a drop loaf, and my new curiosity.
Oh, I love that.
So tell us a little bit about your work right now. You're teaching and baking at Seminary Hill Farm in Ohio.
Well, I have loved this transition to the farm. It has become for me so motivating to understand how we grow our food and gorgeous vegetables that we're producing and inspiring new ways to use them in my breads. I have to say that it's been a real renaissance for me. And Currently, I'm working sharing a professional kitchen with the kitchen crew. I don't yet have a bread oven, but interestingly enough, I think I'm producing some of my best breads. I feel like I've settled and I have a sense of home and also a sense of focus that I've never really experienced before. We hope to build out a little education center and bakery, and we're starting to work on classes and events for the future.
That's great. And talk about how you're incorporating the vegetables into the bread.
So I've developed a milk bread as one of our signature breads. And when I say that, we are going to begin our CSAs, Community Supported Agriculture, come May. And part of the CSA is a bread add-on. So we're going to be offering three breads for five different CSAs. And I have been experimenting with a bread tart using milk bread. And, for example, yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, I baked off a carrot tart because the carrots that came up from our farm were utterly delicious. I have to say, it's so interesting to taste a carrot like you've never tasted it before. And the same with our cherry tomatoes last summer. I was just amazed at the difference. So the carrot tart was delicious, and I incorporated a little bit of ricotta and orange olive oil and then Parmesan, but certainly the taste of the carrot was prominent, and that's one way I've been using, you know, the vegetables.
And you say it's got a milk dough tart? I mean,
It's milk bread as the base, and it turns out that the milk bread bakes beautifully. The color is so brown and deep and earthy that I love the contrast with the ricotta center, and then whatever vegetable is seasonal. We've been using spinach, we've been using carrots, I've been using beets and sweet potatoes. It's the perfect foundation to show off our vegetables.
I've got it. So it's more using it more like a focaccia than an actual tart. Like, it's not a tart dough where you're grinding up the milk bread and...
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that does sound really great.
It's become a thing.
I love those kinds of things.
Yeah, me too.
And tell me about the local grains that you're using.
So I was introduced to Monroe Stutzman a few years ago, who's a farmer, an Amish farmer in Holmes County, Ohio. They have a farm, an organic farm, where they grow all of their grains, and then they mill them as well. They've built their own mill, and I don't know if you're old enough to remember the game Mousetrap.
Yes, I do.
Well, their mill's a little bit like that. And yet it's very sophisticated, and I got a tour of that and their farm many years ago, but fell in love with their turkey red, which they grow, as well as rye and spelt. These grains are just magical to me because not only are they so flavorful and deeply textured, they're wonderful to work with. The whole wheat, the turkey red, is such a pleasure to shape and to bake. So we're very happy with those grains. I'm sorry, are you hearing an interruption?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
And I think I want to just point out for people who don't bake that, yes, grains of different sorts and their flours will have a very, very different behavior and very different feel. So when Sarah says that they're a pleasure to work with, It's a real physical relationship, and everything is in each grain is very different. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I love your knowledge of flowers, Amy. I was looking over some of the handouts that you sent, and it's very educational and helpful.
Yeah. Well, there's so little that we know about the world of flour. I couldn't believe, you know, when I first got my cookie made with fresh flour, I was stunned at how I could have been mildly obsessed home baker. You know what I mean? You like to bake, you like to bake, right? And I didn't know about the potential of these ingredients. And I'm still kind of shocked. That's almost 10 years ago, but we are just, that's hidden from us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I made molasses cookies, and then I decided to add buckwheat, and all of a sudden, it was a whole new taste sensation, you know, kind of like that delicious carrot. So it's fun to be at my age and relearning everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the ingredients just open up to you.
They really do.
Now let's talk about another thing that should get opened up, and that's the idea of recognizing women's contribution to the world of baking. You've been doing this for a really long time, and can you reflect with me on the difficulty of the media world paying attention to the contributions of women to baking?
I can. I go back to the same place where Sharon Burns' Leader began. You know, Bread Alone was simmering when Tomcat Bakery was simmering, and although I remember Sharon, always Dan Leader and Noel, who were the owners of our respective bakeries, were focused on in terms of really starting the bread-making movement. I remember also Steve Sullivan of Acme, although, you know, Nancy Silverton had a lot of focus on her with La Brea. But I do feel as if we who have come up from behind have never been given the same voice, the same focus, the same attention, maybe the same respect as a lot of our male counterparts. And I'm not sure why, but we, you and I, and probably a lot of us out there would like to kind of turn that around a little bit. I remember hearing or seeing something written by Sharon Burns' Leader about going to, was it Europon or one of the
I think it was Europon, which is a baking industry trade show in Europe.
Right. And feeling that she wasn't being listened to at particular booths with the same regard that men were being listened to. And you know, I still feel that. And it's been a bee in my bonnet for a long time, Amy.
That bee lives in my bonnet, too, obviously.
I know that it does. And I do sense some change beginning to happen. The Flower Sisters on Instagram are new, and they're potent. And you know, I like their message.
Yes. And for people who don't know, if hashtag Flower Sisters and at Flower Sisters and Instagram channel, just to uplift women who are doing great work in bread and grains.
Yes, and I know that you know more of these women from, you know, from the farmer to the miller to the seed collector. You're so wonderful at capturing all of the different components and highlighting all of the women who are doing incredible work and also very hard work.
It's real work. I think I'll become the Studs Terkel of women baking.
I love Studs Terkel. All
right. Me too. That's my new goal.
Yeah, in fact, there's a real honor about this craft of work. As old as I am, I still honor the day every day I make good bread, so it's very valuable to me for that.
That's wonderful. Sarah, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Well, of course. You're going to be my new best friend down in Asheville, so I can't wait.
I know. It's going to be fun. Thank you for joining us on today's Food Diary. This has been Amy Halloran talking about women in grains.